League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams July Summer Sale and get 30% off paints and stains July 18th through the 28th. With prices starting at $34.29, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
You to stop what you're doing and listen.
It's In This League.
My style is impetuous. My defense is impregnable.
Come again?
With Scott Bogman and Chris Wells.
Can't wait.
What does that do? Does that blow your mind?
That just happened.
Welcome back to In This League right here on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. And for this hour, got something a little bit different for you where we're going to be playing some interviews from my show, Prospect One. If you guys don't know about it, you can go catch it over on iTunes or anywhere that podcasts are listened to. Of course, just search Prospect One. And what I do here is I cover the entire prospect game from the dynasty perspective. So that's a big thing that we're going with as well. I'm out at a lot of games, and I like to try to bring on people that are doing the same thing. So today, in this episode of Prospect One, which you can go catch, we're going to be playing some of the stuff that's going on there. And Chris Blessing from Baseball HQ, great site that you should go check out, he joins me here to talk about really the first week of the minor league season, some of the guys that he was able to go out and scout. You've got some of the top prospects like Juan Soto. We're going to be talking about some of the Atlanta prospects here. He's out in Atlanta, so there's a lot of coverage there. And just some of the hot performers. And then a little bit later in this hour, I'll also be playing to you a thing I do called the Top 10 Not 10 with some deeper prospect guys and their rankings. So this is Chris Blessing from Baseball HQ joining me on my show Prospect One, and you're getting it right here on In This League on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Joining me now to talk about a host of different prospects, especially guys that he's covered. It's kind of our prospect report here. It is Chris Blessing from Baseball HQ. You can find him on Twitter at C_Blessing. Chris, what's going on, man?
Hey, what's up, Chris? How are you?
It's good. It's just the Chris cast. We'll just Chris. Hey, what's up, Chris? How's everything going? What's going on over at Baseball HQ? The first guy, this is a preemptive conversation to what we're going to talk about. We're going to talk about Juan Soto right off the top here, but you just penned an article over at Baseball HQ where you were kind of breaking down Soto and what you saw from him in April, and you've seen him most recently. So what's up with that article? What else do you have going on?
Yeah, well, we published that article yesterday. It was well received. Anytime that you're talking about a big time prospect, it's always well received. Plus, we threw in a little nuggets of some other Nats prospects, which we'll talk about a little later. And this week, I'm working on a Birmingham Barons review of sorts. They came to town. They faced Chattanooga. Birmingham's a AA affiliate of the White Sox. Some good stories there and some really bad stories there. So it will be an interesting breakdown of some prospects.
Okay, that's I dig that. So yeah, who have all been? You just said Chattanooga. You've seen Rome, Hagerstown. Are those the big four? Who are the? So just so people get an idea.
I've seen those four. I live right between Rome and Chattanooga, so I see a majority of Southern League and South Atlantic League games. I'll go up to AAA, may go up to AAA on Sunday to go see some Oakland A's prospects like Jorge Mateo and Sheldon Noose and Franklin Barreto. So Birmingham was in town for the first weekend, and also Hagerstown. So I got to see both of those teams and file my reports on them.
That's beautiful. By the way, when you see Mateo, you're going to be surprised. It was one of my biggest takeaways most recently was how his body has progressed. Because Mateo, I always kind of talked about, and it could be false perception from images and videos that you watch early on, but his body seemed to be, you know, just more slight than anything. But seeing him out here in spring training, I was really shocked at how his body had progressed. It kind of reminded me of the same progression if you had ever seen Leody Tavares, who was slight and really kind of bulked up and grew from extended spring training and from instructs this most previous year. But he kind of has like a Buxton body feel to him now. So I'd be surprised when you see Mateo. I dig
that's making that trip even more worth it.
Exactly. All right, well, let's get into it. You've covered a whole bunch of these guys. You've seen these guys. So we're going to get some in-person conversations. And it's funny that we're talking, and it's good that we're talking about Soto first. This was the very first game that I locked into on my MILB.TV was I wanted to make sure to watch Juan Soto, and he was the very first one I locked into. You've seen him in person. His first at bat, as I covered here last week, you know, phenomenal start, opposite field homer, just such a great feel for it. People want to question sometimes the strikeouts with him a little bit, but he has done nothing but absolutely dominate, as he should, but he has absolutely dominated to start the season. 393, two homers, two doubles, two triples, got a couple stolen bases, and he has walked more than he strikes out. That's the feel for him. So talk to me about your breakdown of what you see in Juan Soto when you see him in person.
Yeah, so I was attending that game when he hit the home run. I had watched batting practice and had made up some judgments on his power. I didn't know really what to expect with his power. I'd heard people say that it was raw power, raw plus. But during that batting practice, I saw a lot of loft the other way to left center and even to left field. And then you go, you watch the game, and against the left-on-left matchup against Kyle Muller, he hit a 93-mile-per-hour fastball, was right on it the other way for a home run, as you documented last week. And I've been kind of explaining. We'll talk about Christian Pache a little bit. I was there for his two home runs against Sean Newcomb. But in that, I wrote an article on Pache and talked about how Pache, I hadn't answered whether he had raw plus power yet. I didn't see it really in batting practice. He was only really jacking the ball out to the out left field, that kind of thing. Watching somebody like Soto, I knew he had raw plus power already, so I knew he had loft going the other way. But the over the fence power leads me to believe that he has raw plus power, which 70 grade power is not something I was expecting when I went and saw him this week.
When you look at Soto, like, I have been high on him for a long time. And, you know, the rankings prospectively for people when you're ranking prospects, be it fantasy or be it real, I've seen Soto as a top 20 prospect for the last 15 months. One of the things I had a bit of a problem with was his, you know, he got injured last year, was kind of the short stint that he had last year to really, you know, you don't want to extrapolate the numbers across a full season and be like, this is what you have. But he has dominated. He hasn't hit under 300 at any moment as a professional. So you temper yourself a little bit. But he comes off to this huge start. Looks like he physically got a little bit bigger, like maybe put on a little bit more muscle.
Yes.
Okay, he has. You can confirm that in person. Where does he sit when you look at Juan Soto comparatively to top prospects? I mean, it seems like his arrow is moving up to now the more mainstream. So I ask you, A, where are the comparative prospects that you have him around, especially as you're putting him as maybe a potential 70 power? And do you think he is potentially going to be a top five prospect at the end of this season?
Well, in my article, I said that he's a top five prospect midseason.
Boom.
I fully believe that. He'll be in my top five. You're going to assume that Acuña has the at-bats that he's not going to be in there anymore. And maybe, you know, I can see Bichette and Guerrero getting into my top five. I'm really high on those three guys, just like everybody else. I can see Soto either breaking the top five or just being barely outside the top five at midseason. The key thing that he's that you see is you see the swing. I mean, the swing is just absolutely beautiful, smooth. He's very strong. His wrist, his hands. I mean, you're looking at some muscle definition, the quickness and stuff. and you mentioned this earlier in another question about the strikeouts. A lot of that is still some struggles with recognizing spin. I feel like he has a good idea of what a pitcher's trying to do to him. He does have advanced baseball instincts, but I do believe that there's still this maturation that he's going through, obviously. And it's understanding, A, what the spin of certain pitches look from. You know, I saw him against a lot of left-handed pitching, and I saw him struggle picking up the slider and the curveball. But then it's also against right-handers, staying balanced enough to avoid lunging at curveballs, changeups. I mean, so you're looking at a guy that is showing that he has this maturity, this baseball IQ, with these skills, with still some maturation left. To me, he's probably a future top prospect once you get guys out like Guerrero and Bichette as they graduate. I mean, we're looking at a number one prospect probably 2 years down the line if everything happens the way I believe it will happen.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think we walk into 2020 and Juan Soto is probably the number one prospect in baseball, and he'll be pushing 2019, you know, maybe mid-season as a top two or three, you know, pending the guys that are there. Like you said, there's the Bichettes and you've got Vladimir Guerrero and potentially who else ever comes in. I think it's fascinating. You know, I'm trying to think of how many in-person at-bats I saw, but I want to say it was probably upwards of 40 at-bats from Ronald Acuña in the Arizona Fall League. And you can always find the things that you pick apart from these phenomenal talents.
Yeah.
And he could get over aggressive, and he can kind of press himself a little bit, which he can be prone to strikeouts. And you just look at a guy like Juan Soto, and when I hear you talk about it, I just think this is a guy that once you get the pitch recognition under the belt, once you see better pitchers and you start to dominate his skill set, to me, I'm not trying to say he's gonna be better than a guy like Ronald Acuña, because I think he's going to steal a lot less bases than a guy like Acuña.
Yes.
But I think as a pure hitter, I think he could be better than Acuña.
Yeah, I agree with that. I've been thinking about your second part of that question. I avoid it like a politician. I'm a bad comp guy. I don't like to throw comps on guys. Usually.
And I didn't mean comp, by the way, like you have to say,
yeah.
Who do you see? I even more so, the answer that I would totally accept is guys that you have him around right now. Like, what variants of prospects are you ranking him with?
Which I threw, yeah. Right now I'm ranking him with guys like, obviously, Vlad is the top of the class once Acuña graduates. So it's the next tier, the Rogers, Brendan Rogers. I can't think of any of them.
Like the Gleyber Torres's, Kyle Tucker's?
Yeah, like that.
Okay.
You know, the next tier. I like to tier my prospects. So,
sure. And it makes sense.
Tier one, like right now, tier one is, of course, Acuña and Guerrero. And tier two is the next guys. Jimenez is in there. And I would put Soto in that tier two right now. He's just further away. That's the difference.
A good debate would be Soto versus Tatis Jr. That would be a fun one to have and have a good debate. But obviously, for another time, we can do that. A couple other Hagerstown guys, though, because I think that is one of those teams that's really stacked with young talent to look at. And there are two guys here that are on a lot of people's minds. Luis Garcia is a very popular fantasy guy that people have kind of jumped in on. His minor league career so far, 293, one homer. It's been really minimal. The stolen bases are there. That was all from last year. This year, though, he is, I think he was leading off. I don't think it was Antuna.
Yeah, he was the leadoff hitter.
Yeah, so Garcia hasn't started off crazy or anything like that. 242, no homers, a stolen base, walks and strikeouts are about at the same point. So what did you see and what do you see from Luis Garcia?
I unfortunately got a look where I saw a bunch of left-handed pitching against him. I would prefer to have seen righties against him just because lefties are hard. He took a big jump. I mean, most of us believed he and the other guy were supposed to be in extended spring training and maybe going to the short season A-ball team. We didn't expect him to go to Hagerstown to start the year. The one thing I liked about him was, A, you've got to like the speed dynamic. Kid gets down the line very fast. You're looking at plus maybe even 70 grade speed. I didn't really get a good 40 or good home the first time on him. The other thing that I really like is although his swing path and some of the length issues that we see in young players, it wasn't beautiful, but like when he did make a good swing, you could project that swing out to be at least a 50 grade hit tool. The one thing I did not see, and this is a BP a thing, I didn't really see him have much loft on his hitting. He did come close to hitting the ball out, but he has an awful lot of topspin off the bat. I don't think he's going to be anything more than a 40 grade power hitter. He would have to probably do a lot of swing reworking to get to that point. And I don't know if you want him to be that. He's a speedster. He can run out, essentially outrun the ball. So for him, his big thing is that he may not be a shortstop. He may be a second baseman. I think they had him play at second and third when I saw him.
Yeah, I think he was at second. I think right now their lineup is Garcia as the second baseman and Antuna's a shortstop.
I really believe he's probably going to be a second baseman long term. The arm wasn't strong. I saw him at third base. I'm looking through my notebook. I saw him at third and second.
Okay.
He wasn't really tested, but on a turn at second base, I kind of gave his arm a 50, so...
What about Antuna? Antuna has not started. He did not start off well in the season so far.
Yeah.
He's striking out a pretty heavy amount. Average is low. But I feel like Antuna is valued higher than a guy like Garcia. And Antuna was in some people's top 100. So talk to me about Antuna.
Yeah, I think that's a little too soon, to be honest with you. Very, very raw hitter. Has some of the same issues as Garcia. The thing that he does, you know, we didn't really get to talk about Garcia. Garcia will take pitches. Antuna is very aggressive. As a right-handed hitter, which I saw him mostly, he's got a long way to go. As a lefty, he's a little better hitter. He's a little more mature with his swing. His swing path's a little more consistent. He does have a slight hitch from the left side that is hurting his reactions on this level. And right now, the game just looks too fast for him, which we see... I'll say I see it with five or six top prospects every year making their debuts in the Sally. Last year, a big one was Darian Cruz of the Braves. The game was just too fast for him, and that's what it looks like right now for Antuna.
That's a good comp. Speaking of the Braves, let's kind of move over and talk about a few of these guys. Darian Cruz, by the way, over in Rome, he was playing on that team. There you go, Chris Blessing from Baseball HQ. A little snippet there. We're going to continue more of it on the other side of this break, so don't go anywhere. This is In This League, FNTSY. Check us out at InThisLeague.com. More Chris Blessing. I'm Chris Welsh. This is In This League right here on Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Be right back.
Playing daily fantasy basketball this year? Consider Daily Roto your go-to resource. Whether you play on DraftKings or FanDuel, Daily Roto's customizable projections, podcasts, strategy guides, and lineup optimizer will help you compete with the pros in a fraction of the time. With a team featuring millionaire maker winners and live final champions, there's no better place to get your NBA DFS content. Better yet, you can save 10% using the promo code FNTSY. So go to dailyroto.com/premium and learn more about our awesome product.
It's In This League.
Buckle up, buckaroo. All night.
Welcome back. This is In This League right here on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Where are you listening at? You listening maybe on the website? You know, fantasysportsnetwork.com/radio. Did you know that, A, they have got a free app? You can go check that out, the Fantasy Sports Radio app on any of your app stores. B, you can go download the TuneIn app and you can find FNTSY. And C, maybe three, however you want to use it, iHeartRadio. Yes, we are on all those places. You can catch and listen to us live. But if you want to listen to us on demand, you can catch the podcast over at fantasysportsnetwork.com/radio. We are also on iTunes and Spotify. So this show you can catch over on Spotify. If you're listening to all your music and you want to pop in some of your podcasts, you can do that right over there. And if you want to upgrade even more of an experience, maybe you want more In This League, go over to InThisLeague.com as we have got the football, the baseball. We've got all these podcasts over there. It is Bogman and I. Right now, though, the rest of the hour, we are doing something a little bit special, is I'm playing you some of my prospect coverage from my show, Prospect One. I've been talking with Chris Blessing from Baseball HQ. We've been breaking down a whole bunch of prospects, and we are getting into a conversation about talking about Christian Pache, who is a guy that's ready to break out with the Atlanta Braves. And luckily for us, Chris is out in Georgia. He was out at the, they had the, sometimes they have these games. I don't know if every team does it. I feel like it might be a series that they do for every year. A couple years ago, 2 years ago, it was the Padres. I know the Braves this year had a big one, and Pache, he made a big splash because he hit two bombs in the game, one against Sean Newcomb, and he is a kind of a highly touted prospect that is ready to break out. So we're going to kind of uncover some of that right now. We're going to continue that, plus a few other prospects on Chris's mind. So here you go. This is me and Chris Blessing talking about some prospects. Christian Pache, who we kind of mentioned before, I think it's really an interesting conversation, though this isn't a guy that that you had saw in one of these games. I just want to talk about him from a perspective. You saw him in kind of that Braves versus Braves game.
Yeah.
I feel it's interesting when you talked about this plus power, raw power, where I also feel like we're getting into this streak territory. He's got 721 career minor league at-bats with zero home runs. It's continuously going on. And his minor league season's... What's that?
Yeah, interrupt you real quick. Here's a crazy thing I want to say.
Yeah.
I watched him, sat on him 15-plus games last year. That included three batting practices. I did not see in any of those batting practices, or even in-game, him get the ball to the warning track.
Really?
Nope.
That's so, okay. Now, what's so interesting about him is he is a darling prospect, I feel like, to people. When people are sitting here talking about who's the next big thing, I feel like Pache has been one of those guys because of the raw tools. The speed has been there. The average, I shouldn't even question it. Yeah, it's been there. He's been like a 280 hitter, so the average has been there. The speed is there. The physical tools are there. That Braves versus Brave game, you see him hit a couple homers off of Newcomb, yet we are closing in on 800 at-bats without a homer. As I say this, of course, we'll definitely probably get the first one within minutes of us talking about this. But talk to me about your ranking of Pache and that raw power. Well, potentially you were talking about raw power, but nothing going to the warning track.
Yeah, well, we're good probably on him hitting a home run today.
It's like almost guaranteed, right?
Yeah, it's almost guaranteed, but we do have the Florida State League maybe working for us, maybe helping us on that. You know, hitting home runs in that league is just difficult. But the one thing that, like, you know, watching Pache, okay, so he lined one of them out of the ballpark. The first home run, I think it was a two-run shot against Sean Newcomb. It was lined out of the ballpark. A lot of the same things I saw the year before on that hit. Some top spin. I mean, he just crushed the ball. So that home run might have been a little fluky. Second one, he gets under the ball, and it just goes.
Murders it.
It just goes. Off the bat, you knew it was out, but it was one of those things where you were like, okay, write it down. I saw loft. I saw some loft during batting practice as well. So when you're looking at a guy like that and see inside information, the gentleman – Pache spent most of the offseason reworking his swing, changing his dynamics. Hasn't lost the contact part of his swing. Still hitting the ball hard, still doing all that. But you're starting to see loft in his swing. So right now, I kind of will say he has raw average power. He's also, just like Jorge Mateo, has transformed his body. He was a skinny, scrawny kid last year with athletic... had athleticism up the yin-yang. Now he's a lean, muscular, you know, not too muscular, not to lose speed or anything, but he's a lean, muscular kid now with this athleticism.
Okay.
So,
is he a top 100 prospect for you?
Yes. I think he just missed my top 100 to start the season, the preseason one. But now after seeing him, I'd probably bump him up a few spots, maybe in the 80-90 range. I want to see what he does in the Florida State League.
All right. right. Look out for that homer. Braves young pitchers. We'll talk. We'll end it. We had this and then a couple more just ending some guys that you've seen.
Yeah.
But as far as Braves young, the young starting pitchers, there's been a lot of conversation on this podcast, really everywhere, because they're so stacked. I think Ralph came on and said Bryce Wilson was one of his biggest bold predictions for the season. You've got a lot of guys that obviously Soroka is Soroka, you know, and what he's done in the minor leagues. I've always been kind of a Joey Wentz guy. There's Ian Anderson guys. When you've seen a lot of these guys, you've covered a lot of these Braves.
Seen them all.
Yeah, you've seen every one of them, so you're a great resource for this. Of this entire crew of the Braves young starting pitching, where do you lean as far as, like, your go-to guy? Who's the guy that you lean on amongst all the Kobe Allards, the Andersons? Where do you sit?
Well, actually, the number one guy is, for me right now, is probably Kyle Wright. I'm just in love with that dude.
Sure.
But if we're talking about the really young guys, I have a hard time right now saying that Joey Wentz isn't the best of the group.
Love it.
He's further away than Colby Allard and further away than Mike Soroka. Soroka's almost like a favorite just because he's so consistent. But, like, his growth has been what you expected, and there wasn't really the huge upside and that kind of thing. But, however, like, Joey Wentz, A, pitches within himself. He's a tactician out on the mound, even off the field. I've talked to him once or twice. I've talked to people that had known him back in Oklahoma, Kansas, wherever he's from. I think it's Kansas. And, you know, nothing but great things. This guy, it's a process to him, getting good. He's a better athlete than all of those players. So, like, this is a kid that I expect to add velocity. He's throwing in the low 90s right now. He has a really good curveball. And the changeup went from being sort of weak at the beginning of last year to you know, flashing potentially plus. So I graded out three potentially plus pitches. And as you know, that's, as an evaluator yourself, you don't do that often.
No. I mean, the guy that jumps off the top of my head right now, I'm going to talk about it here probably in a little bit, is like guys like Jesus Luzardo. You know, the guys when you're looking at three plus pitches, I mean, I'm thinking Mackenzie Gore has definitely got two plus pitches, but I'm trying to think if that change really sat there. But yeah, you're absolutely right. Three plus pitches is a whole nother realm. And I'm with you on Joey Wentz. Joey Wentz is right outside of my top 100.
Yeah. I have Joey Wentz in my top 75.
Love it. All right. Real quick, just random question. Do you view Touki Toussaint as a starter or reliever? Because I'm still so torn after watching him multiple times in the fall league and like what he can do. But I'm really torn if he's ever going to be a starting pitcher.
Yeah, Touki's a great guy, by the way.
Yeah, he is.
Very quiet guy. Very, very reserved guy. I believe that he's a reliever long term. Just because the windup's very jerky, and you know, I see fastball curve, the changeup's there on some days and some days it's not. I've seen him pretty much every year of his development since he's come to Atlanta. Of course, this year I haven't caught up with, I think he's on Mississippi this year. I haven't caught up with him yet, but he's gone through a complete metamorphosis since he's coming to that organization. They have tinkered with him. They have changed him. And I just want him to go from one time to the next time to see him using the same delivery.
Yeah, that's a great point.
So like that's a big thing with his development. He's outside my top 100. He's outside my Braves top 10, right? But that doesn't necessarily mean I don't like him. I absolutely love the guy. Plus, it's a deep system. So
I like that.
Good random question.
Yeah, it just popped in my head. I was just thinking about Touki when we were talking about the pitchers. All right, a couple more here on our prospect report with Chris Blessing. Drew Waters, outfielder, who it looks like there's a lot of skill set. I watch multiple games because I like that that Rome team has got Drew Lugbauer and they've got Giancarlo Encarnacion and Drew Waters. Drew Waters kind of also in the middle of all that stuff, you know, with all the weird things that happened with the Braves and losing prospects. He was at the center of it. But as far as a prospect goes, I didn't see him. I didn't see him shine in the early games that I was watching. But what do you see from Drew Waters? What is the prospect that you are evaluating?
He's a very divisive prospect. You're not going to get the same opinion from, you know, it's not even going to be in the same ballpark. You either like the guy or you don't like a guy as an evaluator. So what I see that Drew Waters does right is, first off, he's a heck of an athlete. He has a lot of athletic skills. He's very small physically. And it's something that was very noticeable during the Braves Future Stars game, where he was the smallest guy on that team. There were kids from Latin America that weren't even on the Braves Future Star team that were bigger than him. He was definitely the smallest guy. He's also a switch hitter, and there's a lot of inconsistencies with his swing path, especially when he has to switch over mid-game. Like, it's almost better that he's right-handed the whole game or lefty the whole game. He hit a triple in one of the games, absolutely crushed the ball the other way as a right-handed hitter. Just absolutely crushed the ball, and you're like, wow. And then he struck out on several pitches. He has virtually no pitch recognition skills right now. It's going to be a tough go until he game plans at the dish instead of reacting. He's going to be successful right now. He's going to need to have a little more game plan.
I like it. Giancarlos Encarnacion, he's one of the very popular deep prospect sleepers. One of those guys that people throw in is like, you know, hey, get ahead of it. You know, like, I have a top 500 list. If he's sneaking on there, people think he's going to boost up. Big kid who's playing third base recently with Rome. What do you think about Giancarlos?
He's not my favorite. I will say this. He has the body that you look for. He has the length you look for. The swing is very, very, very raw. He is getting by with fantastic. This is his gold standard, hand-eye coordination. The kid is getting away from his struggles because of hand-eye coordination. Once the stuff ticks up, we're talking maybe high A, but mostly double A, he's going to have some struggles there. The swing has a hitch in it. While he swings very fast, he has plus swing speed. It takes forever for his hands to get into the hitting position. So he doesn't react well. He is virtually only swinging at fastballs right now because there's nothing he really can do with the breaking ball because of the hitch area. He just can't respond to it. So he just lets it go, which is a smart thing, but in development, you want to see how they handle that and all that stuff. In the field, He is right now a 30 defender,
okay,
maybe 20 defender. He has horrible footwork, especially on throws. He does not move well laterally. More than likely, he's going to outgrow the position because of the lack of reaction skills and all that kind of stuff. He has a potential of being a really big kid, a really strong kid. Like, the body is like, you want your guys to be a teenager and look like that. I mean, because you could just dream on him. But more than likely, I see him moving to the outfield, maybe left field, as the best potential fit, or even first base.
That would definitely make sense. All right, last one we'll cover here. A lot of guys that you've seen, like we talked about with the, you know, Rome and Hagerstown. How about go to Chattanooga? And I've covered Nick Gordon a lot. But one of the guys that I've been a big fan of, and I do think in the especially the fantasy prospect world, it's kind of divisive on how people are going to treat this guy, and it's Brent Rooker with the Minnesota Twins, obviously double A. What do you think about Rooker when you've seen him? He's moved out to the outfield, slow start to the season, mashed homers last year, of course, 18 in his debut. I've always been a big fan, but what say you?
Yeah, I saw three games. He had some power. I missed BP. There was a car accident on Interstate 75, and anytime that happens, it's the worst thing for a prospect writer because there's no other way to get up to Chattanooga. But I miss BP. Talked to a scout, a veteran scout, a guy that I've known for about 4 or 5 years who was doing that series, asked him. And he graded out. He told me it was his power was the plus feel. It was plus power to the pull side. Okay, so as a right-handed hitter, that means left and left center field. He didn't see any bombs to center or right. The loft was there to center field, not so much to right field. So, you know, he's going to be a guy that's going to be turning on fastballs in. And that's kind of the scouting report I got from the Florida State League last year. As a hitter, I think he has average hitting skills. He has an average to above average bat speed. He's selective. His biggest weakness as a hitter may be when he does not get under the ball. He does not have the wheels to really do anything to maybe inch out a hit or something like that. I saw him defensively playing exclusively first base. And the footwork was a little questionable around the bag, but it wasn't anything that really alarmed me like the last guy we talked about, Encarnacion. It was more so just footwork issues that I'm sure the Twins are just going to be able to fix. They're one of the better organizations. They somehow made Jorge Polanco a workable shortstop. If they can do that, they can make Rooker a workable first baseman or outfielder.
I like it. All right, there you go. That is Chris Blessing from Baseball HQ. Go check it out. You're going to want to go check out. You can sign up with them and check out that Soto article. Looks like a fantastic read. I suggest you go do it. And you can follow him on Twitter at @C_Blessing. Chris, I am going to absolutely steal you next month because I want to talk draft with you. You're a big draft guy, so people can be on the lookout for that. Maybe we can get a few other prospect reports on some other guys, but definitely hit some draft stuff. Anything else people should be on the lookout for coming up?
Just that White Sox article. I'll be also breaking down the Marlins AA team that's outdrawing their major league club, and Elliot Ramos is coming to the town next weekend.
You're in for a treat, my friend. I covered him in the AZL. You are in for a treat with Ramos for sure. All right, Chris. Yes. Blessing, appreciate you, my friend.
All right, man, take care, Chris.
Big thank you to Chris Blessing from Baseball HQ. Like I said, you can go and listen to all of the Prospect One podcasts and all the previous ones and future ones on iTunes. Just check it out, Prospect One. That's the search tab, and you will get completely hooked up. Don't go anywhere. We've got one more segment, a few more prospect stuff. I'm going to tell you a segment I like to do called the Top 10 Not 10. We're going to do that on the other side of here. So don't go anywhere, because you're listening to In This League right here on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
Did you know that you can listen to this show live on the award-winning Fantasy Sports Radio Network? Listen on the iHeartRadio app, the TuneIn Radio app, or download the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. The Fantasy Sports Radio Network is the only totally free 24/7, 365 Fantasy Sports Network of its kind without a subscription. Check out YouTube Live on the Fantasy Sports Network YouTube page and participate in the programming there, where you can ask questions, discuss the topics with other fantasy enthusiasts, or tell everyone that you disagree. Call into your favorite show and ask your question. The number is 844-84-FNTSY. That's 844-843-6879. The Fantasy Sports Radio Network, your free fantasy source 24 hours a day.
Welcome in this league.
I love you.
Ready to party!
Welcome back. It's the final segment of In This League right here on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Great show. Bogman hasn't been here for this last hour, but because we are replaying some of what I do over at Prospect One, give you guys a taste of what you can get. I mean, you got the full interview of Chris Blessing I did in this most recent episode. And what we're going to do here in this final segment is a segment I do called the Top 10 Not 10. What it's designed to do is highlight the prospects of recent that have been shining, but not the top 10 guys. Not to talk about Kyle Tucker or Eloy Jimenez or any of those guys. It's kind of beyond the top 50. So I could have done the top 10, not top 50, whatever. But, top 10, not 10 sounds good. That's what we're going with. So we're going to play that. You're going to get the top 6 that were in my top 10, not 10 from this week. If you want to find out who 7, 8, 9, and 10 are, you can go and download the episode Prospect One. It's episode 65. Go subscribe to it. Love to have you over there. And if you missed, obviously Chris Blessing was on the episode. So here we go. This is 6 of the top 10, not 10 from Prospect One.
Prospect One.
The top 10, not 10 prospect spotlight.
Prospect One.
Covering some of the hottest prospects in all the land. But they're not the biggest names. They're not the biggest guys because, frankly, MILB pipeline, everyone is going to tell you about the absolute biggest names. I mean, frankly, this would be the Juan Soto top 10. You know, we can just go through every stat line if we wanted to, but he's a huge name. At least if you listen to, you know, my show or you listen to James or Ralph or anybody like that, like Juan Soto's a top 20. He's been a top 20 prospect for the last year. He truly has. And he is just taking the next step. So let's not sit here and go nuts about those. Let's dig a little bit deeper. Let's talk about the guys that are really lighting it up early. This is a little variance of the top 10, not 10, of course, because of the early state of it. But we can still get down with it. And first up, we've talked about him multiple times from the Kansas City Royals and the Lexington Legends. It is right fielder Sully Matias. And boy, has he been lighting it up. Now, this is leading up to Friday. This is not counting Friday stats and everything that I'm going to tell you because I am recording this on Friday. But in the 27 at-bats in 8 games, he has already hit 4 homers, 10 RBIs, put a triple down on it. Now, he's striking out a little bit, 11 strikeouts in 27 at-bats. That's part of his game, but 2 stolen bases, 4 homers, a couple walks under his belt, a .333 average with a .400 OBP. I was pretty impressed. I went back and watched that first game that he had, the 2 homer game. And I tweeted about it. If you guys saw it, I tweeted he had that monster to left and he had that big old monster to center. And then he just did it again. And again, he's got those 4 homers. I was impressed with the lack of business that was going on with the swing. I had saw Matias, I mean, I think it was early 2016 where, you know, he was a power hitter, but average wasn't necessarily like part of the game. I mean, in 2016, because I think I saw him potentially in rookie ball, he hit .250, and across both levels of the Dominican Summer League and the AZL in 16, he only hit .235. In 2017, he improved a bit in a full season, hitting .243. So, you know, there's been an element of a swing and miss, a pretty big element. I mean, in 2016, 86 strikeouts over 196 at bats. That was a problem. Got a little bit better the next year where he lowered the strikeouts to 72 over 222 at-bats. The power was always there. But this year, it looks like he shortened the swing out a little bit. Like he's got a better idea of pitch recognition, which is a huge, huge plus here. I do not think he's going to be a 300 hitter this year. I'll be pleasantly wrong for sure. But I think if we see a jump from, you know, he went 235 to 243, if we see a jump, which I think is possible, to the 270 range to 280, this is going to vault Matias as a top, I mean, God, dare I say a top 50 prospect? It's possible. He'll definitely be in the conversation of a top 75 fantasy prospect. Some may have already kind of had him there. I wanted to see the adjustment happen, and the adjustment is happening. So we got to temper ourselves, but I think he's on the right path right now. He's going to smash his homer total from last year, and he's also going to play a full season. So this, you know, this will be the full time we're going to see him go 400 to 500 at bats. And if you paired out what he did over the previous seasons, that might be a 15, 16, 17 homer season. I think he could push the 25 marker as well. I mean, with some early stolen base numbers he has, if we see 25 and call it 12, 25 and 10 for Matias hitting .280, that is a huge, huge adjustment for a player that a lot of people just assume might be the power only tool. So I like what I saw in his swing early on. His results have definitely been there. He's still striking out though, which is an overall problem, but he is on the uptrend for sure. And he rightfully so belongs as probably the top player, even though there's another guy who's just wild right now. I believe in the top 10, not 10, he's the most exciting player to start the season that you should be talking about. Number 2 from the Oakland A's and the Stockton Ports, pitcher Jesus Luzardo. Now, one thing I try to do with pitchers here, because if you remember from previous seasons with the top 10, not 10, I like to pair hitter, pitcher, and just go back and forth for the most part. And with the pitchers, there are plenty of guys that had really like nice performances in their one game starting. There's lots of those guys. I mean, I would say one of the players I would have loved to talked about, but keeping the nature of the top 10, not 10, would have been Walker Buehler. Like Walker Buehler was incredible at his start. I watched all of his first game, a little bit of his second game. His stuff is so on point. But Jesus Luzardo, in his first 2 starts, been fantastic. A 1.8 ERA. He's got 9 2/3 of an inning under his belt, but while striking out 16, he's walked 4, but only given up 6 hits and 2 runs. Now, there's some guys that have, you know, a lot less hits, a lot less runs and whatnot, but Luzardo, with the strikeout numbers, looks like he is going to be a huge booster this year. I think I mentioned it in the previous episode. I was really impressed with some of the video I was watching from his first start when I went back and watched it, where I just don't think I had caught this before of how much he would change his delivery across the game, really keeping hitters off balance. And I think that is that was just like an old school, like LeVon Hernandez used to do stuff like that. I think we would see that from Pedro, and where, you know, you're throwing maybe your first, you know, three pitches, or, you know, your first run through with a guy, you're just kind of doing your standard delivery. Next up, he'll start doing like this Dan Heron hold, and then he'll do a super hold, and then he'll quick pitch, and he'll kind of go from the side. Those are things that it's a totally intangible thing that you're not seeing in the numbers, as far as, you know, how is the velocity of his fastball or the spin rate of his curveball or whatever it is. That's a totally intangible thing that I'm like locked into now, and I want to see more of it. Not to mention that he's a three pitch guy and they all seem plus, and he's connecting with all of them. He's just boosting up. The early numbers are fantastic. And, you know, you look at his minor league totals, which really only consisted from last year because he was a guy that was coming off of Tommy John surgery. But in 50 innings pitched across the last 2 years, he's got a 1.7 ERA, striking out 64 over the 53, and the strikeout totals seem to be really taking a boost this year. So Jesus Luzardo, definitely a top 10, not 10 stud. Number three, this guy is the player I was referring to, Asuli Matias, that I think from a performance standpoint, this is the number one guy right now. And it's wild to me that he's on here. But this is the number one player from a performance standpoint. Though from an overall prospect standpoint, I still think there are question marks. I am talking about the San Diego Padres AA outfielder right now, maybe first baseman, San Antonio Missions. I'm talking about Josh Naylor. Now, Naylor, I obviously saw in the Arizona Fall League. I saw a lot of him, a whole lot of him. He was on that team with Ronald Acuna. And one thing I always pinpointed about him, regardless of his less than stellar weight that always was kind of going on, was just he's just a natural hitter. That's what the dude does. He's a decent I don't want to call him a decent defender. He's not a decent defender. He's at best average defender. But I'd see that guy every day get a hit. He'll slap it to left. He'll slap a homer. Well, his early performance in this season, he is crushing the ball at AA. In 7 games and 28 at-bats, he's got 5 homers, 12 RBIs, even has a stolen base, hitting .464, but, you know, a .484 OBP because he doesn't walk that much. Leads the minor leagues at this moment in RBIs and homers. And he also making a move to play more outfield because the Padres signed Eric Hosmer. So the Padres have to figure out, do we have a spot for this guy? Because we don't have a spot for him at first, because Hosmer is the guy now for however many years. So they got to figure out, can we put him somewhere else? Naylor desperately needs to get his body in check. Like, I don't know what the issue is. And I don't know. I mean, I'm not someone to talk with my body, but I just don't understand from a standpoint of your professional athlete. This is your career. Like, you need to lose the weight. You need to get in better physical shape, especially if you're going to be an outfielder. And I think some of that is going to hold him back a little bit, but the bat's going to get him there. There's just no denying it. I just don't think he's ever going to be that big of a homer guy. I shouldn't say that, though, because, you know, contact players can definitely get there. But the guy can hit 300. He really can. He's just got a knack for it. I posted out videos from the Arizona Fall League. It was interesting how aggressive he was. I talked about this with Juan Soto last week, where you choke up on the bat, and Naylor in BP was just purely doing a choke up session where it was like, whoa, you're really on it. And he was just spraying the ball around. He's also a guy that doesn't wear batting gloves, which I don't know why that bothers me, but it just does. But Josh Naylor, incredible early season start. I would consider from the fantasy standpoint, this would be a player I'd be trying to sell high on, though. If you can sell those stats, and not enough people are talking about him, so it makes it a little bit more difficult. But I personally am still selling on those. But I mean, at the same time, maybe no one buys into it, so maybe you're not getting anywhere with it. But that's number three. Number four, from the Chicago White Sox, playing in the Carolina League for the Winston-Salem Dash, which I don't know if you saw. I believe Chris Paul, point guard, Chris Paul owns some of the Winston-Salem Dash. And I think there's an ITL listener who actually might work with the Winston-Salem Dash. Got to hit me up about all this stuff here, buddy. It is Dane Dunning. I love Dane Dunning. I've talked to him the last 2 years in spring training. He is just he's a funny dude. He's a happy guy. He's from Florida. He's now 23. He's going to be pitching the rest of the year at 23. I do think he's a tad old for where he's going because we're talking about advanced high A. I think mid through this year, though, he's going to make the adjustment up to double A, and that'll be a good test for him. But Dane Dunning has been phenomenal in his two starts. He's got 11 and one-third inning while striking out 16, a .79 ERA. He's only walked two, given up five hits, and one earned run. I watched his most recent game, which was, I was watching on MILB TV just the other day, April 11th, and his stuff was just on point. He struck out eight in both of his previous two games. He only gave up two hits in that game. He did hit a batter, but his command looked so good. There's a part of me I'm a bit tempered with him, like I said, because he is an advanced high A. He's a 23-year-old. Kind of some of the same stuff we talked about with John Duplantier about, like, you know, you're a little bit older for where you're pitching right now, and it kind of shows. But Dane Dunning has just been successful every point of his minor league career. 191 career innings pitched with a 2.6 ERA. He's also struck out 216 over that 191. So, I mean, you know, that's a fair little look at a season total. This is a 200 strikeout guy, and I just don't think he's been tested enough. So I want to see him get tested. I wish the White Sox would be a little bit more aggressive with him, but early results have been great. Dane Dunning coming in at number four. Number five, Minnesota Twins in the Midwest League playing with the Cedar Rapids Colonels. It's Alex Kirilloff. And I've been watching a bunch of these games because who's on that team? Alex Baddoo is on that team. I believe Royce Lewis is on that team. It's a pretty stacked team. It's one of those, I think I mentioned it in the stacked teams, but it's a good team to watch. I would definitely consider it. I think you might even have Steven Gonsalves there. No, Gonsalves is in double A, sorry, because this is a full season A ball. But Kirilloff, who's coming off of missing the entire 2017 season due to injury, has had a really good start to the season. He's had two homers, 10 RBIs, only struck out four times, hasn't walked, but has a .296 average with eight hits and 27 at-bats, including a couple doubles. His last three games have all been multi-hit games, 2, 3, and 2. He looks like the best player out there. And that was one of the interesting things that I kind of want to monitor. And I want to make sure, and I'd suggest to you, if you're into, you know, these guys, I would try to watch a couple, like, you know, give it a week and see what the Cedar Rapids look like right now. Because Akil Baddoo is struggling. He's struggling with strikeouts pretty bad. And Alex Kirilloff seems to be so locked in. I mean, Kirilloff looks like the best outfielder out there right now. I mean, he's a big dude, 6'2", 195. And I feel like he's going to be on a tear this season. I don't know how aggressive they're going to be with him, and I don't know if they're going to keep him with Baddoo, but it's just one of the things that, and maybe it's a counter effect where you see a guy like Baddoo who's struggling and Kurt Kirilloff, who really seems to be the best hitter on the team right now, and I wonder if it magnifies it a little bit. But I've always been a big Kirilloff guy. He sat, before the injury, he was inside my top 100 easily. He's just outside it, literally just outside of it right now. As I'm looking, I have him at 101. I kind of want to make the adjustment seeing some of these early results pop back in, and I think I will. So be on the lookout for that for the next update. But Alex Kirilloff has had a really good start in the top 10, not 10. Number six, I mentioned him before. Don't trade him for Maiton or anything like that, but you should give him a consideration. It is Shane Bieber with the Cleveland Indians playing in double A and the Akron Rubber Ducks. The names are so good. In two starts, he's pitched 13 innings, struck out 17, only given up six hits. Hasn't walked a batter, hasn't given up a run, hasn't hit somebody. Six hits, 13 innings, 17 strikeouts. He just picked right back up from his 2017 season. 17 was, I don't even want to call 17 like the breakthrough, because 16 in his short amount of time, he was phenomenal. But in 17, he went 170 innings with a 2.8 ERA, 10-5 record, striking out 162 over 173 and only walking 10. Think about that for a minute. 173 innings, he walked 10. It's really, really good. This year, he's picked right back up in his Cliff Lee style while walking none, striking out more than his inning pitch are. So, I mean, hey, maybe I you know, maybe you need to walk back the comment I have about dropping Maiton for Bieber. I'm not ready to let go of the excitement of Maiton, but Bieber is a guy I kind of want to own. He's only 22 years old. For whatever reason, he feels like he's 25. He's in AA. He is dominating AA in the early stages. He dominated in 2017, which 54 of his innings in 17 were at AA. And he had a 2.3 ERA, struck out 49 over 54, and only walked 5 in AA. He's going to move up to AAA. Don't be surprised when Bieber's in the rotation at some point this year in Cleveland. I think he's a guy that could come up. The early season success has really, really proved it. And the Indians have, they got injury issues. You know, Danny Salazar still fights. You're putting Josh Tomlin out there. That's a little bit of a problem. So Shane Bieber is, the excitement about him is that he picked right back up from last season's success. And that's kind of an outlier to me. That's something that jumps out. And that's the episode. Thanks, everyone, for listening so much. Bogman and I did 2 great hours. This was a touch on Prospect One. If you want to catch any of this that you missed, go listen to it on demand over at the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Don't want you to miss a minute of it. And you can always listen live every Saturday that we got the show going on iHeart. Tune in. Obviously, you can listen to it on the Fantasy Sports Radio app. But for Bogman, I am the Welsh. We will see you, Nick. We will see you next time for In This League right here on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.